Trevor, now that we've heard all this virtuosic playing on this instrument, how the heck does the thing work?
How does it work? Right. When it works. Right. It does. The harpsichord mechanism is actually quite intricate, even though simple. Right. It only has a couple of moving parts, which are, you know, tolerance is probably a tenth of a millimeter for whether they work or don't work. So I thought I would show it to you there, and then we could maybe compare it to a piano action and see how incredibly dissimilar they are. The only thing that they share in common is that your finger pushes the key down. Okay. On the harpsichord, this is a harpsichord model here, and Norman Shepherd, who made the harpsichord, also made this model for us. So it's kind of nice, and it's a one-to-one. It's exactly the size of everything. When you play, you push down this key here. Okay, and he even put a little soundboard in here. You can hear it, right? A tiny piece of soundboard. When you push the key down, there is a wooden stick called a jack that rises up, and it goes through this little wooden collar here called the guide. So the jack rises up, and sticking through the jack is a tiny piece cut from a crow's feather, which plucks the string on the way up. So you got your jack rising up a few millimeters from the string, the crow feather that pokes through the jack plucks the string on the way up, okay? And on the way down, it's such an ingenious mechanism, there is a little pivot in here so that when the quill hits the string on the way down, it's able to slide off the string on the way down and reload. It's spring-loaded, it goes under the string, loads into position, and is ready to go again, as you can hear in all the trills and things like that. It has to be able to reload rather quickly. So the only really, you know, moving part here is this little pivot where the quill is. It's an automated guitar pick, really. I mean, that's what it is. It's a keyed guitar pick. People had harps for centuries, and this comes along in the 14th century with somebody saying, what if I keyed that harp for you? You know, what if I put keys on? Think of the speed with which you could play. And I'm sure the harp player said, please get that thing away from me because, you know, it's cold. I can't touch the strings anymore and all that. But what is set loose is incredible figuration, harmony, you know, playing at great extremes, playing, and you could hear in the Bach fugue, we did even three voices, four or five simultaneously because your fingers are controlling it. So that's what's made possible by this little jack, okay? That's what happens. Again, now the piano by comparison, if we can get a nice shot of this, here's the same thing. Here's the player's end of the business, right? You push your key down, and what you engage in there is a very complex mechanism, a whippin that lifts this hammer right here, okay? And you see the tail of the hammer is lifted up right there. The hammer is rushed toward the string. Notice this great big felt hammer versus the tiny little crow feather, right? The tiny little, you know, millimeter long crow feather. This hammer then, you know, crashes into the string. You'll notice that on the piano, all pianos have this, it's called an escapement mechanism. The hammer rises toward the string, and then just before it reaches the string, the power train is broken so that the hammer continues on its journey and hits the string, but does not jam against the string, okay? That's the most important thing, is that the hammer hit the string and bounce off of it, okay? But for our purposes today, comparing it with a harpsichord, just look at all these leverage reversals. It's a Victorian clothing, I think. You know? It's a Victorian invention.
We'll do a show about that sometime.
Right, exactly, right. The secrets of it. Right. But anyway, I just wanted you to be able to see it. And of course, how much more massive the piano mechanism is. This is one key, again, versus what's going on in one key down there on the harpsichord, okay? And of course, you know, just aesthetically, going back to the basic sound, the harpsichord, you have a fine, fine wire being plucked by a piece of a crow feather that's just a couple of millimeters across and 3 millimeters long. Here you have a huge piece of felt hitting a string. It's not as big as that bar there, but hitting a string that is stronger than a bridge cable on a piano. That's how hard and thick the wires are on the piano. The piano, I think, aesthetically by comparison, the piano makes a very terrestrial, kind of a cloudy sound that rolls through the concert hall, you know, and can project over an orchestra and a Rachmaninoff concerto. The harpsichord is incredibly fine. It's, I would almost call it, you know, idealistic, and everything in it, its sound goes upward. If you kind of feel the trajectory of it, it's a vertical lift versus terrestrial, I would say, with the piano. You know, I mean, if you had to compare them, which, I mean, they certainly feel very different.
And also, they sound very different.
And with a harpsichord, if two people are talking, you can't hear the music. You're right. Mm-hmm. You know, harpsichords at cocktail parties, right? There's a reason for that, right? With a piano, 400 people can be talking, and you can hear the tune and all of that by nature of its amazingly big hammers and large wire. But of course, it's a much cloudier, you know, sound as well. So anyway, I just thought it's kind of nice to do this because it's very hard to open up the harpsichord and show you inside what's going on. And thanks to Norman Shepherd for not only building the beautiful instrument I'm playing, but building a model of it as well. This just did not come easily. Yeah. Anything else that we're forgetting?
I think let's hear what one of these things sound like.
Yeah, that's right. Now we'll go back to the harpsichord and play just three little, you know, bonbons, I call them, right? Little encore pieces, a very short Scarlatti sonata, probably written quite early in his career. A Bach, a piece from the Anna Magdalena notebook. This is the famous Musette. Perhaps Bach didn't even write this Musette, because in the Anna Magdalena notebook, it was just kind of a scrapbook, a family album that they copied pieces that they liked into. It wasn't necessarily by Bach, although I think he did have a hand in the very gnarly central section of the Musette. You'll hear it when it goes interstellar. That's got to be the master talking. And then we'll end with Handel's famous Gavotte in G. Okay, and then.
So back to Scarlatti.
Yes, I thought we would do three short little pieces to close with. This is a minuet that he wrote probably quite early in his career, maybe even written before he left Italy. It's in C major, and it has some of that beautiful innocence that Bach captures in the opening of the Well-Tempered Clavier. And part of it is the way that they know, they both understand that C major is a key of origins and beginnings. I think here you can hear the kids on the playground in Scarlatti. Famous Musette. Cute. I added the little Scottish ornament in there too.
How nice. Obviously, the family was pretty good keyboard players.
Right. And let's do one more. Handel's Gavotte in G.